problems just don't seem to go away with our normal discipline approach. In this session, Scott and Joanne provide a very systematic approach to dealing with the difficult patterns children experience. You will learn how to address those tough problems the same way Scott and Joanne do when they counsel with families one-on-one. As we join Scott and Joanne, we'll get some insight into the ways they help their clients develop a specific plan for those more pervasive problems children experience.
Sometimes when we work with children and their behavior, we find there are some dimensions of our children's behavior that just don't change. I mean, it's just frustrating, isn't it? I mean, you're working on something over and over and over again. In fact, the thing that you're trying to, you know what's wrong, you see it's wrong, and you know what they need to do, but the things you normally use to discipline just don't seem to be working. And so you're ready to pull your hair out sometimes. Isn't it frustrating at times to be in that kind of a situation? What are some examples of situations in which you've got in kind of ingrained pattern problems, or you've got difficult issues over and over again that you're just having trouble getting rid of? What are some examples of that? Yes? Okay, constant art of negotiation, arguing. What else? Yes?
Telephone calls.
How do you deal with children when you're on the telephone?
Okay, you're on the telephone. Not your teenagers on the telephone. But no, okay.
Four to two.
Well, just wait. Telephone call problems change. Get older.
Okay. No, mothers understand. Telephone means I'm on the phone and we have a problem.
Exactly.
Okay, good. Telephone issues. Good. Somebody else. Yes.
Constant whining.
Whining. That is a difficult one, isn't it? What else? Yes.
Picking your clothes up off the bathroom.
Okay. Leaving messes everywhere, right? Okay, good. You must have teenagers, right?
Yeah.
Dennis, good. Yes.
Constant yelling. Stop yelling.
Okay, yeah. So just loudness. All right. So there are a number of ingrained patterns that our children develop, habits, and it's frustrating to deal with those. Now, I gave you a little puzzle to work on involving nine dots, and the goal was to connect these nine dots, as you can see on your sheet, with four straight lines without going over any of the lines, that is, without repeating the line, and without lifting your pencil. Does anybody get it? Oh, that's right. Yes. You already know how to do it. Okay, some of you know it. How many of you don't know how to do it? All right. Let me put this up here because I want to illustrate this to you. What we have here are nine dots with a very frustrating experience because we can't figure out how to do it. And there are times when you feel like, I think, with your parenting that, man, you know, I just don't know how to deal with this. Don't you feel that? Don't you feel the same way about this puzzle as you feel about your kids sometimes? I just don't know how to solve this problem. And you continue to deliver consequences, but they don't seem to be working. And so you get frustrated. It can be a difficult experience for you.
You know, sometimes when parents tell us that their plan isn't working, they've got a problem with their child and they're trying to work on it, nothing seems to be helping. The first thing we try and do is troubleshoot their plan. We try and, you know, what is going on? Maybe the parent doesn't have a tight action point and they need to be working on that end. Or maybe they're not teaching their child how to respond appropriately to discipline. Maybe they're not using the break that we've talked about effectively. Some kind of a parenting problem is going on. So we try and talk about that with the parents, a parent problem or a parenting problem. And that's what the parent needs to focus on, to go back to the basics. What are we teaching our children?
So first we try to troubleshoot their plan because maybe their plan's wrong. It's lacking something. But if we do that, and often it's the case that the children still have a problem, then we use a specific plan that we're going to share with you tonight to address those problems. The problem here is that you're limited by the box that you see. If we draw a larger box here, then maybe you would be able to figure it out. Okay, so we're going to take this dot, four straight lines without lifting your pencil. Think you can duplicate that on your paper now? Take it home and show it to your husband or whatever. The point we're trying to make here is that when we can't solve the problem, sometimes we need some bigger kind of a plan, a bigger perspective. Now, we're going to share with you a bigger perspective today. In fact, we work with children and parents in counseling often, and one of the things we do is try to help parents expand their perspective on their children and develop specific character development plan that we use with them. Character development. So this bigger framework that we're using here is character that we're going to work with children, not just behavior. Behavior is just this green box, but character is the larger issue. And so we'll take some time and develop with parents a character development plan for their children, because we say that the secret to dealing with difficult problems is to use a character development plan. So we're going to share that plan with you this evening.
You know, usually when a parent comes to us with a concern, that concern focuses on behavior. They're seeing something in their child, the child's doing something they don't like, there's unwanted behaviors, negative behaviors, and that's what the problem, that's what it looks like. We see the behavior. But underneath that behavior is a deeper problem, what we call a character issue or a heart-level problem. So as parents, we look at the behavior, we say, I don't like what I'm seeing. But there's a deeper level problem that the child needs to deal with, and that's a heart level problem. And so we're going to talk about character tonight and developing character, because that's really what leads into the behaviors that we see.
In the Bible, in the Gospels, Jesus criticized the Pharisees for looking good on the outside, working on behavior, but their hearts were not right. In fact, he said, "Clean. If you want to have a clean cup, clean the inside of the cup, and then the outside will be clean." What he was saying to them is, you've got to deal with the heart. You can't just deal with behavior. So we deal with a lot of behavior as parents. But what we're going to say tonight is, let's move past that, and let's start dealing with the heart in some of these very difficult issues, and then we'll see some change take place in children.
Now, sometimes as parents, we feel overwhelmed by the problems that we're seeing in our children. It seems overwhelming. They're not changing, and... So we're going to share a strategy with you tonight that can help you with some of those overwhelming problems, the bigger problems, more than just the day-to-day discipline, but some overarching problems that our children have. And that strategy will help you develop a plan for that. But in saying that, even before we get into the plan, I just want to say that it's really, as we get to these problems with our children, we realize our own limitations as parents. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do to influence our children, but it's really God who works in the heart of our children. And we can do some things to change their behavior, but it's God who changes their hearts. So we're going to share with you a plan tonight, kind of a strategy, a six-step plan. But in sharing that, we want to say also that it's important to be praying for your children, be praying for yourself as you work with your children. And it's really God who changes hearts, not just us as parents.
We can't solve all problems with children. And I saw this article in a paper this week, a parental exchange magazine where parents are trying to meet other parents and deal with issues. It says, our son Glacier is 3.5 years old. We would like to connect with other families. We enjoy being outside, gardening, family, and nutrition. We're also looking for any tips on potty training Glacier with an outhouse. He's 3.5. Thank you, Mike Morrow, Wasilia, Alaska. An outhouse in Alaska, and they're trying to potty train him? I say, great. Good luck. And I'm thinking, there's some problems that we wouldn't even try to touch. But, you know, as we work with our children, sometimes the challenge for them is that they need to change some ingrained issues. And when character is the challenge that we're working on them, we're trying to help them develop patience, or we're trying to help them develop the ability to communicate instead of be violent. When we're doing all of those kinds of things, that is often difficult for children. It requires that they go through a process of work, and that work is hard. But sometimes the struggles of our lives are what produces that character, produces that patient endurance that helps us develop the inward heart that we need. It reminds me of the little boy who had a cocoon, and he was watching that cocoon every day because he knew that that cocoon would eventually open up and a beautiful butterfly would come out. Every day he would look at it, and one day he saw that it had changed, and it was actually moving. He could see it moving inside, and he knew that that butterfly would be coming out soon. He was so excited. He wanted to help the butterfly, so he cut a little slit in the cocoon, and the butterfly was able to come out easier. But unfortunately, then, the butterfly was not able to fly, because the process of struggle that the butterfly goes through is what strengthens the butterfly's wings, so then the butterfly can live in the real world. That's sometimes what we're doing with our own children.
We see that the same is true with children, is that often they need the struggle in their lives to develop character. I think as parents, we want to give them the easy way out. We like to rescue them. We like to solve their problems. We don't want them to necessarily experience those consequences of their behavior. But we see that often it's the consequences of their behavior that can teach them character. And there's some verses in the Bible, some scriptures that we can refer to in Romans 5 and in James 1 that talk about how we struggle with suffering, but that produces perseverance, and perseverance produces character. And as our children are growing, we want them to develop character, and sometimes that means they have to struggle. So, you know, as a parent, sometimes we want to protect them, or we want to rescue them, take that struggle away. We don't want our children to have to struggle. We want them to be happy. But we're not always doing them a favor by doing that. Sometimes that struggle is necessary for them to grow and to develop character. And how often do you see a family where, you know, the children aren't really required to do chores because, well, you know, we don't want our children to have to struggle. They don't really like doing chores, so they don't need to do that. Or if you take your family on a hike and your daughter is tired and she wants to be carried the end of the trip. And there's times that we just feel like we want to protect our children. We don't want them to go through that struggle. We just want to make them happy. But sometimes that struggle is necessary for them to grow. So we want to be able to see that as parents and realize that sometimes that struggle is okay. Sometimes it's good for our children to have to struggle, and that's okay for us to step back and let them struggle a little.
So how do we approach some of these troublesome areas with our children? When I was working in a preschool environment, I developed a strategy to deal with children who were struggling with character-based issues. And it would involve the parents and the teachers. If a child was particularly withdrawn, or a child was aggressive with other kids, we would develop a plan using one that we're going to share, very similar to the one we're going to share with you right now, to help children overcome those struggles that they're dealing with.
In my experience as a nurse, I see that a doctor has a specific procedure that he follows when he's going to diagnose a problem. And as parents, we can have a similar plan to identify, to analyze, to strategize for behavior change in our children. We can, in a sense, diagnose the problem that our children have, and we can create a plan to help them deal with that. And that's what we're going to share with you tonight, a six-step plan for helping our children through some of those most difficult problems that we experience with them. There are six steps to the plan: observation, diagnosis, solution, treatment, motivation, and follow-up. Those are the six steps, and we're going to walk through them with you, explain how each one of them would apply to a child. And we suggest that as you think through this plan with your own children, your own family, if you have a particular problem that you're going to be working on, that you take some time yourself and just sit down and work through this plan. Maybe by yourself or maybe with your spouse, the two of you sit and talk about it. You know, we got a problem, let's go through this plan. Once you've gone through the plan once, then you'll want to sit down with your child and go through the plan again with your child, just sharing with them the things you're observing, the ideas that you have. Work through it with the child so they're not just receiving the end result, but they're understanding the whole process themselves also.
It's helpful to work through this plan with your children, because when you do that, your children learn not just to deal with the behaviors, but they see the underlying motivations behind their behaviors. And that's very important. So a child working through this plan is often very helpful. Depending on the age of the child, the older they are, the more you're able to work through this plan. But the point is, you're wanting to share as much information with your child as possible about with how you're getting to the place you're getting with this character development plan. When we are dealing with children who come to us who have a problem with anger or disrespect, we find that these children often don't realize that they're angry until it's too late. They don't realize they're being disrespectful. What they need is a plan that helps them understand how all of this works together. And so we put it together with them, for them, to help children make lifestyle changes, not just behavior changes, but it goes deeper than that. It helps them to make lifestyle changes.
So the first step of the plan is the observation step. Now, when you're going to decide you're going to start this plan, the first thing you want to do is write down all the symptoms of the problem. What is it that you're seeing that you don't like? What are those behaviors that are bothering you, the unwanted stuff that you see your child exhibiting? You want to actually write it down, not just think through it in your head, but get out a piece of paper and start writing. Write down everything that comes to mind that you see as a problem for that particular child. Now, those problems may seem unrelated, but you just want to write them all down anyway. Write down whatever comes to mind, and then we'll deal with that later, that they may not all be relating. But you want to be writing down the symptoms of the problem first. You're not drawing conclusions, but you're just writing down the things that you're seeing. And we counsel with parents and with children each week, and often a parent will come to us and say they're having a particular problem, and the plan that they would normally use, it just isn't working. They're not getting anywhere with that child. And so they come to us for some more ideas. And the first thing we'll do when we sit down, we'll say, okay, tell us what you're seeing that you don't like. And then we get out the pad and the paper and we start writing for them. These are all the things that seem to be a problem. The list might look something like this. She seems to be pulling away from us. She has a bad attitude. She snaps at us. She doesn't handle disappointments well. Anytime we disagree, she thinks we're yelling at her. She wants control. She's bossy. When we ask her to do something, she reacts with anger. She has a hard time in group settings. She pouts when she doesn't get her own way. This kind of list we're creating, just the facts. We're not drawing conclusions. Some of you are smiling because it sounds like your child, I can tell. We're not drawing conclusions here. We're just listing the facts, the things that we're seeing. That's the observation step.
There are times when I come home and Carrie says, hey, look, we're having a problem. This problem that we're having with one of the children has been getting worse. And so what we'll do is we'll sit down and make a list of all of the behaviors that have been frustrating to us, things that we don't like. They may be completely unrelated things, but that's not what we're looking at right now. We're just trying to list as many of them as possible. That's the observation step.
Second step is a diagnosis step. Here we ask the question, why? Why are these things happening? What is it that we're seeing? What's causing these problems? Here, what we're going to find is some character quality deficiencies as we work through this. Now, you might look at all these behaviors, and once you're looking at them in black and white, you're seeing the list, you're realizing that some of them relate to each other. They're not all just these strange behaviors, but you can begin to categorize them and where they relate. So you might have a child who's sneaky. He tries to get away with things when mom's not looking. He doesn't finish his homework. He doesn't check in with his parents and let them know where he is. He leaves chores half done. He's got a problem here that we see as a lack of responsibility. What this child needs to do is develop the character quality of being responsible. So we're going to start looking at these behaviors that we're seeing and categorize them, put them in groups. How do these behaviors relate to one another? We might get three or four different groups of them. And then we want to look at what character quality is missing in our child causing these behaviors. Now, sometimes a child may have a positive character quality that's just being misused. Let me explain what I mean by that. I tend to be a rather organized person. I like things neat and orderly. I'm organized. It's the way I can get things done. The problem is that if that's taken to an extreme, I can be rather intolerant or inflexible in a less organized situation. It's like when people say that your strength is your greatest weakness. And there's a positive and a negative side to many character qualities. And I think if we think about it, we can see that with our children as well. I know with my children, I see my son David is a very sensitive person. He's very caring. He's tuned into people, how people are feeling often, and he's very compassionate. Well, that's a positive quality. In fact, I remember one time when he was younger, there was an ambulance zooming down the road, and he began to cry because he said, oh, there was somebody hurt inside there. He's very compassionate and sensitive that way. Well, that's okay, but that can be taken to the extreme, and sometimes David is moody, and he has emotional outbursts. Everything is an emotional deal for him. So it's a positive character quality. He's sensitive, but it can have a negative side of having emotional outbursts. Timothy, on the other hand, has the ability to work hard. He really focuses on what he's doing. He can block out distractions. He's got a determination about him. He's going to get the job done, whatever it is he's working on. Well, that's a great character quality. He's persistent. He perseveres. That's great. It can also show itself as stubbornness. He can, you know, if he gets his mind set on something, that's what he wants and what he's going to do. So often we see a character quality that has a positive side, but it can also be misused and have a negative side. So as we're going through this diagnosis step, we're just thinking now in terms of character qualities. Why are we seeing the problems that we're seeing? What's missing here? What does this child need to develop?
As we look at children's weaknesses, we're trying then to group the behaviors that we see, and we're trying to find a character quality that is helpful in just saying, hey, what is the problem here? What are we working on? It's important for us to then, you know, you see a quality that's positive, but it may be going too far in a direction, so we want to balance the scales with another character quality that'll help make that child a little more rounded out. We're trying here to look past behaviors to the heart. We're looking at character kinds of issues. It's tempting for us to focus on behavior because that's what we see all the time. But if we're going to get some significant change in our children over the long haul, we're going to have to address something bigger than that. And character is the best way to do that by saying, hey, this child needs to focus on this particular quality. Now, a child is having trouble at home with a good attitude, maybe the same child that's not getting their work done at school, not getting their homework done. That child may need to work on a character quality like diligence. And so what we're saying here is identify them, all right? We're going through a process here. Hang with us as we go through here. We identified the behaviors. That was the first step. The second step that we're in is we're trying to group them and label the character issue that's a problem. That's all part of this diagnosis step.
So a while back, my husband Ed and I were seeing that we had a problem with David and that he was doing a lot of complaining. It seemed like complaining was happening all over. It was especially evident at mealtime. No matter what we were serving for dinner, he was complaining about it. Even if it was something he liked, he just was always coming out with a complaint. Something was wrong with it. And we saw that in different areas of his life. He was doing a lot of complaining. And as Ed and I talked about it, we realized what was missing was gratefulness. David was lacking the character quality of gratefulness. Now, character qualities are things like honesty, perseverance, kindness, patience, diligence, thoughtfulness of others. Variety of different kinds of things are character qualities we want our children to develop. And sometimes they're lacking in one area or another. And those are the things we want to develop in our children. So as we go through the diagnosis step, we're looking at the behaviors that we're seeing and we're relating them to character qualities. We're choosing a character quality that may be missing in the child that we want to focus on for them to develop.
Obviously, you're not going to do this. You might do this part up till now when you're frustrated. You're upset. You go, I'm going to go write all this stuff down. So you go and start writing all these. What my child needs is this. You know, he's got a problem with that. You can do all of that. The next step now requires a little bit more thought, more creativity. And so this isn't the kind of discipline approach that you're going to deal with on the moment and say, hey, we're going to solve this problem. Because we're dealing with underlying difficult issues. I happen to be dealing with one in my family right now. And we're developing this strategy for one of my children right now. And I'm going to share a little bit about some of the solution step with you. The solution step now, which is the third step, is where you identify the positive quality you want your child to learn, and you want to call it something. And then you're going to want to define it in a way that a child can understand by giving it a working definition, not a definition that would come out of Webster's dictionary, but a working definition that explains to the child, here's what you need to do in order to accomplish this objective. Remember, you're dealing with not just behavior, but dealing with the heart here. In our family, we generally have a character quality that we're working on with any one of us. I mean, I'm trying to be more sensitive to the emotions of others. My wife's trying to be more intimate emotionally and spiritually. Josh, we're working on a constructive independence. Melissa, we're working on communicating her emotions. Ben, we're working on helping him to become a peacemaker. With Megan, we want her to work on compliance. With Elizabeth, we're having her communicate her emotions and emotional control. So those are character qualities we're working on in our family. It's just known. That's something that we are dealing with continually in our family.
So in the third step, the solution step, we're going to identify a character quality that our child needs to be working on. We're going to identify that quality, and then we're going to define it in a way the child can understand. We call that a working definition. Define it in a way that makes sense to that child. So we can use a big word with children, but then we want to define it so that they understand what we're talking about. One woman who was having a hard time with her daughter not looking at her when she spoke defined attentiveness as showing someone you love them by looking at them when they say their words. It's a definition that gives an idea of what we're looking for, packed right into that definition. Another mom was having a hard time with a child who was becoming frustrated when having to wait. So she defined patience as waiting with a happy heart. We define responsibility as doing the right thing even when no one's looking. We define self-discipline as putting off present rewards for future benefits or sacrificing now to benefit later.
See, those definitions were all made up by parents. Some were made up by us, some by other parents. The goal here is to define it not by Webster, but by some concrete things that the child can do to demonstrate that quality. When Josh was working on piano, it was frustrating for him. And so we define perseverance as continuing on after you feel like quitting. Perseverance doesn't kick in until you feel like quitting. When you feel like quitting, then perseverance takes effect. So we're talking about persevering after you feel like quitting. We teach that obedience is doing what someone says right away without being reminded. It just gives concrete ways in which a child can get a handle on the word that you're using. We don't have any problem sharing big words even with a three-year-old, the word attentiveness. We want you to look at me when I'm talking to you because that shows that you love me. It's a one way of the showing that you love someone is by looking at them when they say their words.
So the situation with David and his lack of gratefulness, well, he had a lack of gratefulness. What we wanted to develop was gratefulness. So we defined that in a way that made sense to him and helped him know what we're looking for. We said gratefulness is showing appreciation for what I have rather than grumbling about something I don't have. So then we sat down, we talked with David about how he needed to develop the spirit of gratefulness in his heart. And this is what we wanted to do. And we told him we wanted him to be more positive in his speech. And we helped him to practice that The fourth step is the treatment step, and that's where we're getting really practical here now with our kids. We're giving them specific behaviors that would indicate developing this quality. So we want to be specific with our children. We want to be clear, simple, practical. This is what I want you to do. I want you to think of something to be grateful for. And so we practice that with our kids. If we're developing gratefulness, tell me something you're grateful for. Have them thinking in those terms. Now, if you're having a hard time here in the treatment step thinking about what are the behaviors I want to see, you might want to go back to that step one where you listed all those negative behaviors. You look at all those negative behaviors, you say, well, what would I like to see instead? So here in the treatment step, we're looking at the positive behaviors that we would like to see replace those other things that we want to get rid of. So here in the treatment step, we're thinking about what is it that we want our children to be doing? What do we want to be seeing that will indicate they're developing this character quality we're looking for?
Most parents, when they are disciplining their children, look for the wrong action. They see what's being done that's wrong, and then they see the right action that needs to be done, and they say, okay, stop doing that and start doing that. Okay, that's the treatment step. And what we're saying is that sometimes a treatment step doesn't work by itself, so we're adding some steps before it and some steps after it in order to make this a bigger plan to work with children. Because what we'll do is we'll take this down here to another step which deals with the heart, not just behavior. This is the wrong action, this is the right action, dealing just with behavior. We're going to take this down to a wrong heart response. So there's some kind of a heart problem there, and we're going to come over here, what is the right heart response? And then from that, we're going to go back up here to the action. See, we're taking, instead of two steps, we're making it four steps. We're not just dealing with treatment all of the time. Something's wrong, you just deal with it. Well, that's how we normally deal with behavior, but sometimes it doesn't work. And so we go through a process where we're taking it down a level and helping children have a more comprehensive plan. Some children, when they're solving problems, especially young children, kick, hit, bite, grab. When they're dealing with conflict management, that's their strategy. And so we're trying to help them learn. That's not how you do it. And so we may say, look, we're going to work on kindness. Kindness, and we'll define it very simply for a young child. Kindness is doing something that makes someone else happy. Now, you're not going to get any prizes for that with Webster. I mean, it's not a very thorough definition, but for a three-year-old, that's all they need. And so you're saying, okay, we're going to learn kindness. Now, what is kindness? And several times during the day, they're saying that. You might put a little picture of something on the wall that reminds them of kindness if your child can read. You might put kindness in the definition there somewhere where your child can see it continually. The treatment step is the step in which you develop a number of practical ways to help this child learn this particular issue. If we've got a child who's grabbing and hitting and kicking, we might say, look, when you're having a problem, we want you to use words. And so with a three-year-old, we'll say, I'm going to tell you what the words are. When you're not happy with what's going on, you need to say, I don't like that to that person. And if that person doesn't respond to you, you come and get help. We're giving them a very simple, basic plan for dealing with conflict at a very young age, and that's going to be developed more as they get older. But we're putting it under the umbrella of kindness so that they understand, here's how you do it. Now, you could use other character qualities. In fact, in any given situation, there may be a number of character qualities you might bring to bear. And so you just choose one, usually, work on that one. And when that one's done, then you might add something else. Kindness is making somebody else happy. And so I'll just be working on that with a three-year-old over and over and over again so that they get that message and they understand what it's all about.
We want to be as specific and clear with our children as possible at this point. There was a time several years ago when Scott and I were speaking at a conference, and both our families came along. We stayed in this nice conference center. We really had a really great time. But I realized when we got there that my boys didn't know how to behave in a fancy conference center. Right away, they're running down the halls and jumping and being wild. And I needed to teach them how to be more respectful in that environment. So I pulled them aside and I said, listen, guys, when we're walking through the conference center here, you need to walk politely. That was the term I used. I said, let's walk politely. And then I explained to them exactly what that meant. You need to walk quietly. You need to stand next to me. We're going to walk slowly down the halls. That's what we're going to do when we're here at the conference center. So what I did is I gave them specific behaviors. They knew exactly what was expected of them, and we connected it to a character quality. Politeness is a character quality. That's what I wanted to see them develop as we were interacting in that environment.
In the treatment step, you're going to try to be as creative as possible. You're going to give your children exactly the kind of behaviors they can use when they don't know what to do, because they're obviously choosing wrong behaviors. They need to know what to do right, so you're going to give them lists of those things. You're going to involve as many people in their life as possible in the plan. If they're going to school, you're going to have teachers involved, babysitters, grandma, grandpa, if you can get their cooperation, dad and mom. I mean, you're going to develop a plan that encompasses as much of that child's life as possible so that that child is going through a bigger process of change than just the little correction every once in a while. This is a big deal. And we're going to involve several different parts in this treatment step to make it work. The next step is the motivation step. This is very important because change is not easy with children. I mean, I think of some of the things that I've tried to change in my life, ingrained patterns in my life, and I go, whoa, that is hard. Surely you must have some issues that you're trying to work on in your own life and recognize that change is difficult. I think one of the things that we can do in motivating our children is to just be empathetic with them. To recognize that, yeah, you're going to have to change, and I know change is tough, but I'm going to be there with you. Change is hard. So that's part of the motivation step, is to empathize with our children.
We want to set up some kind of system of motivation also as we work with our children, because we want them to develop good habits, and sometimes they need a little motivation to get them started in the right direction. It's not unlike what we do with ourselves, I think, as adults. We'll say, well, I'll rest after I get this work done. That's kind of the motivation. If I can get through this work, then I'll be able to rest. We're kind of a work first and then we'll play mentality. And there's a motivation system we build for ourselves when we talk like that. And we can do the same thing for our children. Now, sometimes parents are hesitant to offer rewards to their children. They feel like if I give a reward to the child, then they'll be obeying for the wrong reasons. They'll be obeying to get the reward and they'll not be developing that. And that's a legitimate concern we're going to be talking about in a few minutes. But we believe that motivation can be helpful, rewards even can be helpful, just to get the ball rolling, to get children beginning to practice those right behaviors. We need to set up some kind of motivation system to get them moving in that direction.
So if I see that my child's having a problem with kindness, I'm going to want to lay out a whole plan. I'll sit down, have a meeting with them. You know, I don't just dump this on them all of a sudden. We're going to have a meeting. We're going to go through this process. Let me tell you what I'm seeing, the observation step. Let me tell you what that looks like. That's the diagnosis step. Let me tell you what I see that you need. That's the solution step. And here's how we're going to do it. That's the treatment step. See, you're going through the process with a child in a meeting, and then you're saying, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to set up a motivational system for you. And when you're moving in this direction, you're going to get rewarded. If you're moving the other direction, well, something else will happen. But it's a very positive approach. See, you're growing up. We're tying it to your maturity. And so because you're becoming more mature, we're moving in this direction and trying to give you some motivation that's helpful. Now, sometimes parents have a hard time with this whole idea of motivation. And there's two kinds of motivation. One is internal motivation, and the other is external motivation. It's important to know. Should I reward my child for getting good grades or making their bed or being kind? I mean, shouldn't they do that already? Shouldn't they want to do those things? Isn't that part of life? Sometimes our children have a problem and we decide to motivate them using some external motivation. An internal motivation is that desire to be neat and clean, that desire to do a good job or to work hard or to complete a task, to please my mom or dad. Those are internal motivations. And external motivation are those things we use. The consequences that we give are negative external motivations, or the praise or the reward, a treat of some kind. Those are all positive external motivations. How do you know when you should use an external motivation or not? The key here is that external motivations are valuable if they're building internal motivation. If I'm working with a child and I'm going to reward them for keeping their room clean, for example, you got a teenager who's having trouble keeping the bathroom a mess or keeping their room a mess. And I might say, okay, look, I'm going to set up a system for you, a motivational system as part of this whole treatment, diagnosis, solution. And we come to motivation. I'm going to set up a motivation for you. And I'm going to reward you somehow. Now, I may give that child a reward, an external motivation for doing things the way I want them to do them. But when I give them the reward, the external motivation, I'm going to talk about internal motivation. Boy, it sure feels good to live in a clean room, doesn't it? That's an internal motivation. You hear the difference here? I might give them an external motivation, but I'm talking about internal motivation. They come to me and I see that they solved the problem without hitting or kicking or grabbing. They did what they're supposed to do. They came and talked to me. I give them a reward. Boy, that's great. Because you did that, remember I told you, every time you came to me to solve the problem, I was going to give you this little treat. Here you go. Doesn't it feel good to solve the problem in the right way, I'm building internal motivation at the same time that I may be giving an external motivation to a child. It's important for us to be able to use a motivational system that's consistent and works with our children. I remember when I was a child, my father and mother gave me a star on a chart for every time I memorized a Bible verse. Now, there were some who would criticize that and say, well, you shouldn't reward for something like that. I mean, that's just something kids should do, is memorize Bible verses. But, you know, what happened in that situation for me was that my parents gave me a love for memorizing Scripture. I memorized all kinds of Scripture when I was young because all those little stars, I remember those stars getting put up there, and I was so proud that there was star after star, and my stars went all across because I memorized so many verses. Now, I was proud of the stars, but I was also developing inside of me a real desire and a love for memorizing Scripture. We do the same thing with our children. If I've got a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old who's having a hard time tasting a new food at dinner, I might say, I'll tell you what, if you take a bite, I'll give you a kiss on your forehead. You know, I'm just playing with them. And so they kind of think, well, that sounds a little strange. I'm going to try this, you know. So they take a little bite of food. And, oh, that's so good. I give them a little kiss on the front. They think, oh, I think I like that. Maybe I'll take another bite. We're just playing a game. It'll work with some kid, won't work with another child. But the point is, I'm using an external motivation here to get them moving in the right direction, trying to make the whole experience a positive one with children. Motivation can be a tricky issue. Let me just say one more thing about that, because sometimes we start motivating a child with external motivation and we get some side effects and we say, oh boy, we got to switch this because this is not working. And I think there are times when we change over to another system, either another external motivation or we drop that one. If a parent is, for example, wanting to motivate their child to take care of their little brother, and so they say, hey, I'll tell you what, you can be like a babysitter. You know how we pay babysitters? Well, I'm going to pay you, and you can work with your little brother, okay? And so you can be the babysitter. And so you start paying him. But let's say you start doing that, and all of a sudden this child starts thinking that they're the boss of the house and starts, I'm in charge here, you know? And so they start ordering him around, and you start thinking, well, I'm not quite sure that we're ready for this yet. Or maybe this motivation is encouraging the child to take these quarters you're giving them, and boy, they look in the magazine, everything they want to buy now. They can't hardly wait to get out to spend their little quarter. Every time you go to the store, they want to spend it on gum or something else. And so you feel like, you know, this isn't working. We're developing a materialistic kid here. And so you might switch the motivation because it may not be working at a given time. But external motivations can be used in a situation to help guide our children through a process of change.
A few years ago, Timothy was having a problem with his eyes. He had an allergy problem. His eyes were itching and giving him real trouble. And so we went to the pediatrician, and she prescribed eye drops for him. Well, that's great, but if you think of a 4-year-old who's got sore, itchy eyes, and you try and put eye drops in them, now you've got a real problem, okay? Timothy didn't want to hold his eyes open for the eye drops. It was a real struggle for him. He'd, you know, be pulling away and crying and giving me a real hard time because his eyes were sore. And of course, you know, you can understand that. But what I did was I decided that I would give him a treat. If Timothy, if you can hold still and let me give you your eye drops, then I had a treat for him afterwards, you know, a little piece of candy or something. And that was an external motivation for Tim to hold still so that he could get his eye drops. But what happened was, as I gave him the treat, I also said, boy, you're getting so grown up now. You're able to hold still for your eye drops. And as I talked to him, I tried to build an internal motivation for just holding still and being mature and being able to handle that difficult situation. And over time, the external motivation was less and less necessary. He didn't need the candy so much. Sometimes he forgot all about the treat because he felt good about himself that he could hold still for his eye drops. So the external motivation became less and less necessary as the internal motivation grew, and he was feeling good about the experience. Now, another problem happens in families when we start rewarding children, because if you reward one child, you've got another child there looking over the shoulder to say, wait a minute, where's my treat? And that happened with David and Tim. Here I'm giving Tim a treat for his eye drops, and David wanted just as much treat. But David wasn't working on anything at the time. And often what children will say is, that's not fair. So we want to address that issue also. I mean, should you reward one child and not reward another child? I think that's a significant question often in a family. And what we encourage families to do is to take on that phrase that we say, fair doesn't mean equal. And that's what we teach our children. Fair doesn't mean equal. We don't even try to treat all our children equally, because each one of our children is unique. Each one of our children has his own strengths and his own weaknesses, his own things to work on, the different things. One child will be struggling in one thing, and your other child will struggle with something else. So each one is unique. We don't need to treat them all the same. fair doesn't mean equal, is what we say. So we're not motivated by that statement. That's not fair, because we don't even try and be fair. We're not giving them all the same thing. We don't even try to. So that kind of diffuses the whole issue. So with David and Timothy, if Timothy's getting his eye drops and he's getting his treat, and David says, well, that's not fair. I want a treat too. You know, I can turn to David and say, listen, if you want something to work on here, you know, I'll pull out a character quality for you to develop. We'll develop a system for you, and then you can get that reward too. So we want to treat each one of our children according to their uniqueness. What is that particular child's needs at that time? And that's how we treat our children.
A child might say, hey, that's not fair. He's getting two cookies. I say, don't tell me about him. What do you want? Are you asking for two cookies? Let's start over. Say that again. Don't tell me that's not fair. That's not something we deal with in this family, because we don't even try to treat everybody fair in this family. So you can forget that statement. When Joshua was 7 years old, he needed a lot of sleep. He had to go to bed at 7:30. Melissa was 4. She was growing out of naps. She didn't need to go as much sleep. There were times when Josh had to go to bed before Melissa did. Josh could have said, that's not fair. But see, we're not trying to treat every child equally. We're trying to treat children according to their needs. I mean, what's wrong with that? There was a parable about a landowner who gave some different talents, different people, 5, 3, 1. Well, that's not fair. You got 5. You got 3. Well, they were given according to their ability, that they could handle the money and it was invested, that they could invest. Or God gives out spiritual gifts. He doesn't give spiritual gifts to all the same. He gives them out differently. And according to the grace that he's given, the Bible says. So there's a sense in which God treats people, he doesn't treat people all alike. He treats people according to their needs, according to their uniqueness. And that's what we want to do. We don't want to treat children all equal. We want to treat them special. Every child is special, and we want to treat them accordingly.
So the motivation step is helpful, though, just in developing a system where the children are motivated to change. We want to get something going here just to help the change process get off and running, to get the ball rolling, in a sense. The last step is the follow-up step. Consistency is especially important here, because what we're doing is we're teaching our child about this character quality that we want them to develop. We're teaching them that this is what it's going to look like. We're motivating them to do that. And then we want to be consistent with the follow-up. We want to continue to working on it. We're not just, you know, talk about it one day and then forget about it the next. But we want to hang in there, give them consistent feedback about how they're doing, consistent reinforcement as they're making some changes. We want to be able to reinforce that and encourage that in our children. We want to realize that many little steps are more effective and more realistic than looking for major changes in our children. We'd like to see those major changes, but that's not realistic. We want to be on the lookout for small steps. Our children are trying. They're making those little adjustments. We want to focus on those. We want to reinforce those small steps as our children are making them. That's why we say that we reinforce approximately right behavior. If our children are moving in the right direction, we want to notice that. We want to be able to reinforce that in a positive way, because that will bring effective change over time. But children grow and mature over time. It doesn't happen quickly. We can't expect fast changes, but we need to hang in there. We need to persist with them and realize that the change is going to happen slowly over time.
So we've got the system, I mean, we're trying to work our system, and we're getting even frustrated because we still don't see the action that we'd like to see. What if you're implementing a program like this, you're trying to get your teenager to pick up clothes off the floor, or you're trying to help your 5-year-old handle anger in the appropriate way, and you still don't see results? I want to just remind you of an important truth in the midst of all of this, and this is what we call building a tape. You are building a tape in your child's head. It's important for us to realize that even if we don't see effect right away, we're building a tape in their minds. Just think about some of the things your parents taught you. The tape's running, right? You got it. I mean, turn off the lights when you leave a room. Say, excuse me. Eat your vegetables. Be nice to your sister. There are tapes that play, aren't they? Aren't there, in our mind? And we are creating tapes in our children's heads. Now, that's really important to recognize, because what's the tape like in your child's head? If you're being harsh and critical, often that's what they're hearing. The tape is running. That's what you're playing in your child's head. If your child is having a problem being kind, then you need to realize that you are building a tape in their head. And one of the techniques that we encourage parents to use is what we call the hit and run technique. It's not hit and run. It's the observe and run technique. That's probably the best way to say it. The observe and run. So you're saying, you might see some things going on. You might say, Johnny, that wasn't very kind. And then you go off. You're not sitting down and having a major discipline time. You're just giving them some input. Johnny, that wasn't very kind. And then you're off doing whatever you're doing again. You've left that situation. And they're sitting there thinking, that wasn't kind.
We've shared with you now a six-step plan for helping address some of those difficult problems that you might be seeing in your children. And as you put this plan like this into practice, what you'll be looking for is changes in your child's character, developing character in your children. And as that character develops, the behavior will also change.
This is the end of this tape. We hope this session has been a valuable one for you. We trust that you have benefited from this whole series, and we'd like to hear what you think. Please write to us and tell us how these secrets have helped your family. If you would like more information about effective parenting, call us at area code 609-771-8002 or 1-800-771-8334. We're here to help you. Books and tapes are available, as well as information about upcoming conferences. Thank you for participating with us in this series. We pray that God will bless your family as you apply the things taught in these sessions.